I've never been here before. It's delight. I know the race director very, very well from her work in marathoning and running, and I'm a huge fan of hers, so I'm happy to be here and to be running. And the facilities and the roadways look terrific.
So you've actually won Boston. So many runners can only dream about qualifying and finishing. What was it like to actually win?
I feel that I've never adequately answered the question of what it feels like to win the Boston Marathon, because it's so overwhelming when you're a marathoner, when it's something you've dreamed about for years and years, as I had. Even though I was very young, I was 21, there had been nothing that I was thinking about for 4 or 5 years beforehand, and I was running 120 miles a week, sometimes 140, sometimes 175, putting everything I had into this possibility that one day I might achieve the dream, and then I did. And that's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. Your fastest marathon was 2:19:29. How did you get there?
I think when I first began running, I thought that the reason I loved the sport was I thought whoever worked the hardest wins the race, and I was willing to work harder, train harder than anyone. Now, many years of knowledge and wisdom, I realize talent is a huge part of it. And I was a well-talented runner, but there are runners with much greater talent than I am and runners with less. And to a large extent, your talent determines where you finish, because we all train hard.
You were college roommates with Jeff Galloway and Bill Rogers. How did that work? Did you guys have any idea then the huge impact the three of you would collectively have on running?
The interesting thing about having roomed with Jeff Galloway and Bill Rogers was just the serendipity of it. Jeff and I ended up at Wesleyan without knowing we were both going to be there. And I walked onto campus, and I was a hotshot freshman, and I thought I knew something. And then here was Jeff Galloway, who trained much harder than me at the time, was much stronger. He could beat me up on any given day in a workout or a race. And a couple of years later, Bill Rogers, I did help to come to Wesleyan. I knew him. He lived in Connecticut. He was racing against my brother in high school then. But the thing about Bill Rogers is his college running didn't give any clue whatsoever of where he was going to go after college. Jeff and I were very serious in college. Bill was kind of a running bum in college. He wasn't focused yet. It took him 2 or 3 years after college to get his head together and to decide he wanted to train the way that he had seen Jeff and I train. And once he applied himself, then his talent rose to the top.
So did you all push each other? Did you become better runners because of each other? Or
Jeff and I pushed each other. I would say not that we pushed each other, but we helped each other. We ran some very, very hard workouts together, and that helped us both. Bill, as I said, was kind of a slacker. He was a hanger-on. I would try and get him to do 25-mile runs on Sunday morning with me, but he would be sleeping off his, you know, drinking parties from the night before. So he would get up and run the last 10 miles only. But even that helped me tremendously, and I could see that he was a talented runner. I could just never imagine how far he was going to take it.
Mm-hmm. Turning to Runner's World, you've served as editor-in-chief. You're still a contributor. You've had a huge impact on that magazine. What was it like when you got there? What were your goals for it?
Well, when I first started running, nobody could even imagine a running magazine big enough to support real employees. And when the running boom hit in the late 70s and Runner's World came and asked me to work for them, I was just thrilled beyond belief. It was like a dream job. And I went there, and I have to say, it was a job, it was a company, quarterly reviews and all that stuff, but it was a dream job. I felt like I was working at Camelot. They didn't have to pay me. I'm glad they did, but the opportunity to be at Runner's World was just more than I could possibly imagine. And my goals at Runner's World were always twofold. One, to give an authentic picture of what it meant to be a runner and what it took and the training and nutrition and things like that. And secondly, very importantly, to reflect the evolving audience. Because when we started at Runner's World, there were almost no women runners. And we had to, as women runners came into the game, first we wanted to encourage them because we wanted more people in the sport reading the magazine. And secondly, we had to provide editorial to inform and inspire women. And beyond that, really to invite everybody into the sport, to say it's not just for marathon winners and Olympians. It's for anyone who wants to become healthier and fitter and feel better about themselves.
You were running Boston in 2013 when you were stopped just before the finish line. You've written about it since. Can you tell me about it?
Yes. When I ran Boston in 2013, it was the 45th anniversary of my win in 1968. I was running every 5 years then. And so in some way, I thought the whole race was about me. It's like, isn't this cool? Ambie's running his 45th anniversary. And when I was stopped with 5,000 others with a mile to go, I was upset. I was like, hey, who's raining on my parade? This is all about me. I want to get to Boston and run my finish line, run through the finish line. And of course, an hour or two later, when we finally realized what had actually happened in the finish line vicinity, then of course you feel incredibly ashamed and embarrassed for the selfish feelings that you had at first. And you realize that the events are so much bigger and more tragic than simply running a marathon.
Meb Kifleese won Boston last year, and he ran again this year, but he wasn't having such a good race. He still managed to have a wonderful finish that you talked about today.
Yeah, Meb is a wonderful ambassador for the sport. Last year, he won the marathon with the names of the four victims scrawled onto the four corners of his bib. This year, he didn't have such a good day. He came in eighth, which is kind of normal with all the great East African talent. But still, he found something elevating to do at the finish line. He saw a woman just in front of himself. He raced up to her. He grabbed her arm and lifted it in triumph as the two of them went under the finish line together. And I thought that was a wonderful symbolic gesture of sportsmanship and of the unity that all runners feel on the road. And I'm going to make it something that I do at the end of races, and I'm planning to do it at the end of the half marathon tomorrow in the football stadium.
Definitely makes me want to run faster. So we've been hearing a lot about the weather in all the races you've won. Have you had many that have had to be canceled?
I can't think of a single race I've run that had to get canceled. There have been delays for various reasons. I understand that there are times when race directors have to cancel for usually lightning storm or for extreme heat and humidity. But I find that if you dress correctly, that running in the rain actually improves your performance, because the big obstacle for runners is overheating. And cool temperatures and a modest rain keeps your body temperature under control. And that actually leads to very good running times if you monitor yourself carefully during the race.
So you're not worried?
I'm not worried at all about the weather. I survived Boston on Monday. I will survive whatever Champaign's got to offer tomorrow.